Welcome to 90 Day Fiancé WTF Podcast, a weekly hangout to talk about what the fuck we all just watch on TLC's 90 Day Fiancé. I am Nadia, and with me is my co-host, Lon.
Hey, 90 Day Fiancé, the other way. Finally here.
Yeah, the other way, season 4. So Lon, let's start to manifest this podcast, shall we? This episode. Let's manifest it, as what Danielle would say. Speaking of Danielle, do we want to start with her? Danielle and Johan?
Yeah, I'm down to start with Danielle.
Okay, great. I'll do the intro and I'll tee it up for you. So Danielle is 42 years old, from New York, and she's with Johan, 32 years old, from La Romana, Dominican Republic. And apparently, Lon, this is, I want to say, the first crossover couple. They were part of Love in Paradise. And I think they took their story over to The Other Way. So yeah, I think this is the first crossover as far as I can remember, because Love in Paradise is relatively a new series.
I was going to ask about that, because as she was telling her story, like, and it was showing footage and stuff, I was like, Did I miss a season? Yeah. I was like, did I miss a season? What
the fuck? Where were those footages from?
Yeah. Okay, that explains a lot.
Right. All right, Lon, what is your first impression of Danielle and Johan? Aside from the height difference, of course.
I think Danielle is fun. I really like Danielle. I think a lot of people from New York have really cool personalities. So I really liked Danielle, but I also think she's kind of delusional. I don't understand how she thinks she's going to thrive. And I've brought this to social media. Like, I get it. America's expensive. I get it. Your apartment's 4K, you know, a month alone and on top of other things. Okay, but what's your plan, though? Like, do you just think you're going to pack your bags and leave for Dominican Republic and thrive and be successful? Like, what's the plan here? And, you know, Johan is trying to tell her, like, look, it's difficult here. The same problems she has living in New York are the same problems he's experiencing. Like, Look, for the amount that I'm getting paid here, it's not a lot either. You know, and that's the reason I want to come to America, is because of the opportunities. Like, what was her plan? What does she think is going to happen? That she's going to get a high paying job and be able to live on the beach and sip cocktails? Like, what's the idea here? You know, I like Danielle, and I still think she's going to be entertaining to see. And I think in these first two episodes, their scenes have been really, really fun to watch and have to see them figure shit out. But it's so annoying that, like, I don't know where her mentality is at. And Johan, he's over here. We've seen the scenes where he's like, this is my business. And she's just like, well, you know, where is this money going to come from? And you can't do math. And I'm just like, what did you think was going to happen? That he was going to be a towel boy and then open up a shop, and that y'all were going to just live lavishly on the beach? Like, what was your idea here?
You know? Like, what are you trying to accomplish? Right.
Right. Like, in your fairy tale, where did you figure you were going to get this money? Mm. She obviously had a fairy tale in her mind set up. How are you going to finance that?
Yeah.
You know, like, you were thinking that his meat business was going to be successful right off the bat, because we know that his Sankey Panky salary isn't cutting it, right? You know what I mean? Like, in what delusion did you think that this was going to be, like, an easy cakewalk?
Yeah. Can I also reveal some things? Because I was just like you, Lon. I was thinking, what is her motivation for wanting to stay longer in the DR? And then I did some digging, and apparently Miss Danielle over here has recently declared bankruptcy. She owes, I want to say, the bank or whoever that she owes, yeah, bankruptcy to the tune of $224,584, give or take.
Jeez.
Yeah.
What did she do? Foreclose on a home? What the fuck?
I mean,
that's a lot of money.
Yeah. And, you know, when she says things like she pays $4,000 in rent, I mean, yeah, if you're only a high school history teacher that teaches yoga on the side, I mean, I don't know how you're going to afford New York. But a lot of people on the internet, I mean, unanimously said, maybe move to a cheaper state instead of New York. I don't know,
right.
Like try living in a cheaper state. Like, I think a lot of people felt like instead of being very drastic and wanting to move to the DR, how about moving to Florida? It's slightly cheaper, it's closer to DR, and that's a compromise. But instead, she chose to lie about the visa application. Remember in the first episode where she said, well, he doesn't know I'm going to stay here longer, and I already canceled the visa application, which now it makes sense because if you're bankrupt, you cannot sponsor someone.
Oh,
and again, I think that's common sense because
yeah.
there is that element of like, if you want to sponsor someone to come into the US, you have to have a stable income to justify that you're able to support said person that you're going to be bringing over to the US, because they won't be working immediately. So the government wants to know, is this person going to be well supported? If someone like Danielle has already declared bankruptcy and is openly admitting that she's walking away from a $15,000 pension, I mean,
this changes the entire story for me now.
Right. Is Johan bad with money or is she really bad with money?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So she's basically running away from her problems in the US.
That's what it looks like right now.
And she's hoding that she can pay off, she can save money by being
in the DR. She can
recover
in the DR.
Yes. Get back. Yeah.
So I think that's her motivation, is that, and I think we found out from the second episode that they've discussed this whole like, hey, I'm staying there longer. And then the compromise is that she'll be there for a year. And I'm guessing that's the plan, is to save up enough to go back to the US, probably.
And the plan wasn't to stay longer. It was actually to just stay there.
Yeah.
And he's like, nah.
No. Yeah. Like, you're not going to like the DR.
Yeah.
But I mean, who knows, right? But yeah, like, I think her motivation is to basically recover financially and then maybe move back to the US. But all right, that aside, Lon, what do you think of a reaction to the butcher shop and the meat being sold out in the open? Because as someone from Singapore, it's not shocking to see meat being sold like that in other countries, whether it's third world or first world. I recently got back from my honeymoon in Portugal, and I remember the meat were out in the open too. Like, sure, they may not have a fly problem, but it's still out in the open. So, and I mean, just a reminder to all Americans who might be listening to us, not everywhere is USDA approved or inspected. So I just don't like when people get skeeved about like how things are done differently elsewhere, because it's like you're imposing or projecting your Americanism onto others. It's like, just because it's done in your country this way doesn't mean that it should be done this way too in other countries, because then you have that imperialist type of mentality, right?
Right. And I expected that kind of reaction, and it makes for a good TV, you know. And 90 Day Fiance does this a lot, right? And you'll hear us talk about it, and you've probably already heard us talk about it, that they'll take our American standard, which is first world problems, right? They'll put it in a setting where to kind of show like, oh, this is how they do it in other countries and stuff. And
yeah,
because we're so used to a particular standard, we're disturbed or grotesqued by it. You know what I mean? And for her to be just like, ugh, and I knew that's the reaction they were going for. But it's like, this actually is pretty common in other areas of the world. Like, and he says it, he's like, well, this is how we do it here, you know? And it's true that, like I said, as Nadia said, this actually is not very uncommon. I think for dramatic effect, they're always zooming in on the flies, you know, and they're just like insects crawling in, you know, all that stuff. But like, I'm not saying it's cool. Don't get me wrong. I also am used to a particular level of cleanliness and, you know, stuff like that. You know, I prefer my meats refrigerated. I get it. But again, like, I think they do this. They over dramatize it to get that reaction from her, to get that reaction from us, and for us to be like, wow, this is fucking disgusting. You know, when actually it's normal. It's not that uncommon. Yeah.
Yeah. It's almost like normal elsewhere. And yeah, sure, I wouldn't want to eat meat that has fly poop on it, but doesn't mean I have to like shit on how people do things elsewhere. Yeah, I don't like when 90 Day Fiancé does that.
Yeah.
You know, with other people's country and how they do things and all that. So
for people who don't quite know yet, the meat is cleaned, right? Obviously, you're not going to get home and just fucking eat it the way it is, right?
Yeah, you have to
the
cook
meat
it,
is cleaned, and then when it's cooked in a way so that any bacteria that might have been on it is removed off it, right? And don't get me wrong, you know, there's levels to this and it gets complicated, but you can Google it and you can look it up. And a lot of times the high heat of the cooking temperature will remove most of the bacteria. Right. So I get it. You know, the visuals are not very appealing. You see the flies and stuff and the meat's raw and it's just sitting out there. I get it. And I think TLC does this a lot. It's a tactic they used when Angela came to visit, right? And I think, too, when Big Ed came to visit the Philippines, they're always going to be like, gross. You know what I mean? As they're walking through the marketplace, they do this. It's a tool that they use to get views and get people talking and
shock
stuff
value?
Like that. Right.
I don't know if you have anything else to say, Lon, but I just want to conclude by saying, and I've mentioned this before last week when we chatted, that I feel this Tanya vibe going. I'm not sure if you guys remember Tanya and Sinjin, but you know, someone who sort of fetishize her partner and kind of appropriate things. And I just get that vibe from Danielle. I mean, yeah, she seems fun. She's like a typical New Yorker, but I also feel that kind of like condescending vibe too. Like, you know, the way she's like, I'm gonna get my computer and show you how to enter this stuff in a, you know, my software. And here I am thinking, oh, she's gonna do some QuickBook stuff, and then it's an Excel sheet. I was very disappointed.
Yeah. and the thing too that was frustrating for me was, you know, as she's over here, you know, condescending on him and stuff, he says, well, you tell me then. You tell me, what would you do? What's your problem?
Yeah.
And then she doesn't have an answer. To me, it felt like she's purposely misinterpreting him. She's like, oh, I'm saying, where are you getting the money? And he's saying, no, you're complaining about the business and stuff. Tell me what you would do differently. Like, how would you take this? Right. And she's just like, nah, the money. And he's just like, fucking, what am I miscommunicating here? Like, what would you do? What would you do? You know?
Yeah.
And then she just goes off, you know, on her interview, and she's like, puts the financial responsibility on him, right? How is he going to pay for the place? How is he going to pay to raise a kid? And again, it's circling back to where I'm going, well, what did you think was going to happen when you thought you were going to escape your problems? Did you think money was going to be different in the DR? No. Like, he's trying to tell you, the reason I want to come to America is for the opportunities there. My family members and friends have made something out of nothing. What did she think, that things were going to be great and easy? Like, no, he done told you that there aren't very high paying jobs. And what is he? She's sharing a home with 16 other people.
Oh, yeah, dude. That was mind blowing.
Like, what? Yeah. You know, and then she's going to put the financial responsibility on him. I don't know. And I think they're going to be entertaining to watch. I think there's room here for just to see how she, because obviously there's the sugar mama question, right? And she's like, I'm not going to be a sugar mama, as we see in the previews and stuff. Okay, well, but how are we going to carry the financial load then? What's going to happen here, right? I know he's a really tall, dark, and handsome, sexy with muscles and stuff. But how are y'all going to resolve the financial issues that you both are kind of buried in?
Yeah, dude, that aside, 16 people, one bathroom. That's a no from me, dog. That's a cue right there. That's a line.
Right. Man, yeah. But I keep complaining about how you can't do your 10-step fucking facial routine, right?
Yeah, I know, right?
Come on.
First world problems.
I'm trying my best. Get the fuck out of here. With your fucking rose. What was that? Roller, whatever. I don't
know. Roller, forget. Yeah. Is it the porcelain?
It's like
roller?
A opens your pores. Yeah. What did she say? Oh, this is rose quartz. I'm like, I don't give a fuck. Take care of your skin, y'all.
Yeah. Moisturize, moisturize, moisturize.
Moisturize.
All right. Let's move on to Chris and Jamie. So Chris is 40 years old from Haleyville, Alabama.
Alabama.
And Jamie is living in Bogota, Colombia, originally from Venezuela. I didn't get her age. Not that it matters. I hate the fact that I'm mentioning people's age. I mean, it doesn't really matter. But I guess for added context, in 90 Day Fiancé especially, like, the age does become a factor sometimes. Mm-hmm. So I apologize.
She's 30, by the way.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Lon. Yeah. Someone paid attention. Well, I think they're cute. I'm not sure if they have it together, mm-mm, but maybe that makes for good
Far
TV.
From it.
Like, I
they
think
got
I saw,
issues, y'all.
Yeah, I saw a meme saying, like, is this girl, like, stable? And I feel bad. Like, I don't want to question people's sanity. I mean, we don't know them from a hole in the wall, and we're only two episodes in, but there's something off, you know, about someone who disappears on people and then at the whole necrolepsy. Wow, that's a challenge in and of itself. Mm-hmm. Imagine, like, Lon, if I have that and we're doing a podcast and suddenly I doze off. I mean,
right.
Or according to her in the preview, she does a little bit of a kicks during her sleep. Yeah. She can get pretty violent or animated or something while she's sleeping. I mean, it is a problem. I'm not saying that a couple cannot overcome that problem, but like I say, it probably makes for good TV. Anything, any red flags, anything that stands out?
Everything is a red flag about this couple. Don't get me wrong. I love the representation. I'm super supportive of, like, LGBTQ couples. I love them. I think they're great. I think we need to see more on TV, and I'm glad that Jamie and Chris are here, obviously. And I think, you know, Chris with the challenge of narcolepsy is, I don't mean it's awesome, but that's cool that, you know, despite that, we're going to get to see someone like her on the TV show.
Yep.
But right from the beginning, it's automatically a red flag, right? From the notes I took, she proposes, and don't get me wrong, they all propose way too soon, right? But yeah, they all propose way too soon. Chris apparently proposed within a month. They're getting married within 9 days of her landing. And I'm just like, I don't know. Like, have y'all worked out the problems? In getting into their stories, they have a lot of problems.
Mm.
So from Chris's side, like, Jamie obviously was talking to another person apparently while they were dating.
Yep.
And I'm just eyebrow raised, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But according to Jamie, it was because Chris constantly disappears. Yeah. And I'm like, wait. And maybe I wasn't paying attention in the first episode, but did Chris explain that? Did Chris explain while she's out of the relationship, like, what's going on? And I get it. When you say it like that, I understand why Jamie's like, are we on? Are we off? Like, what's going on?
Yeah.
I'm going to talk to another person, y'all. That's just how dating is. You know what I mean? Like, if someone isn't there for you and you're kind of questioning where the relationship's at, where y'all stand, I don't know. Like, I don't know. Are we together? Are we on again, off again? What's going on here? Now I don't want to paint Jamie in this light that, oh, well, Jamie's over here talking to other people, because that's how Chris made me side with her in the beginning. Was like, mm-hmm, oh, that's fucked up. Like, what? She's talking to other people, but she's like, well, she disappeared for X amount of days, and then we're back and shit's cool, and then she disappears again, and then she disappears again. And I'm like, okay, this is a very different story now. So all of this is like, why are we getting married again? Like, did we figure this out? So yeah, I think they're interesting. They have my interest.
Yeah.
But I have a bad feeling that this isn't going to work out. And that's where I'm at with them.
Yeah.
Interesting couple. I think they're a cute couple. They get giddy and stuff. I like that. I like seeing people giddy about each other and love. And both Chris and Jamie have that same energy. They're very giddy about, oh, I'm so in love with this person. But y'all got fucking issues
totally.
Yeah and it makes me kind of like sad, because I think this isn't going to be good.
I'm with you the whole way. There's nothing else left to say. I guess I'm holding out. I don't see them like crashing and burning.
There is one thing I wanted to bring up.
Sure.
Did you remember when in the first episode, Chris thought Jamie was scamming her out of money by saying, I'm in trouble. I got COVID. And can you send me money? But all the time she's sending her money, she's actually still employed. Something like that, right? Was there some shit like that? Right. And I was just like, again, wait a minute. Yeah. That's not cool. Asking someone, like preying on their kindness.
Yeah.
And saying, hey, I'm in a lot of trouble. I got COVID and stuff. When actually it wasn't even an issue. That was fucked up.
You know, now that you mentioned that, Jamie didn't even mention getting COVID or almost dying from it.
Yeah. Not to her friends during the hair appointment or whatever.
Or
yeah.
even to the cameras. Like, you would think the producer might ask, like, hey, so it sounds like Chris is coming to you because she felt like she almost lost you back when you got COVID. Like, how serious was that? I don't know why the producers didn't ask that question, but maybe she didn't have COVID. And maybe
they
that's
should
why
dig
there's
into
nothing
that
to say.
More. Yeah. Especially if it was scammy. I'd want to know that. Yeah. I'd want to know that.
Yeah. Man, it sounds like Jamie is nice and all, but maybe she's a hustler.
Yeah.
The only thing I want to say before we can move on here is that Chris's mom, Mona, who's so sweet. I like her philosophy. You know, she is a God-fearing person, churchgoer. But I like how she's very open and supportive of her daughter and only wants what's best for her and only wants to see her happy. So it's the kind of mom. It's very exemplary. So that's the only thing that I added in my notes, because otherwise, yeah, it's everything you said. It sounds like Chris falls in love quickly as well. Like, it's, you know, she married twice, have two kids. Nothing wrong with that, but, you know, she was young when she got pregnant. So I guess she is another one that's, you know, just maybe crash and burn, like, you know, jumps into a relationship head first and just, you know, like you said, giddy, right? Giddy in love.
Right.
Basically. So speaking of giddy in love, what do we want to say about Jen from Stillwell, Oklahoma, and Rishi, 32, from Jaipur, India? Is this Jenny and Sumit 2.0, Mom?
I feel bad for Jen because, as you said about Chris, I think she also like falls in love pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Gets into relationships fairly quickly. And her friends also notice this, that this is a pattern.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, you're doing the same thing all over again. Now you're moving to India, but it's the same shit, right?
Did she propose or he proposed? It was within a month as well.
I think she did, right?
I want to say,
did I have that
did.
In my notes?
No, I think he did. And he...
Yeah, I don't have that in my notes.
It doesn't matter. She lost the ring.
She lost the ring. You know, I'll take your word for it. If he did, let me rewind. At first, Jen was giving Darcy vibes for me. Strictly because she's going for the young, foreign model type, right? Like, and then, you know, Rishi's over here posing with six-pack abs and black and white photography. And I'm just like, oh, here we go. Right? And she's just like, oh, you know what I mean? And to give Rishi credit, right, he's, what, got a law degree and
a master's? Yeah.
So he's not just a model. He's also a personal trainer. So it's not just so much that he gets by on his good looks, right? But I'm always wary when someone has a shit ton of social media clout. He's obviously like somebody on social media because he's a model. And then for Jen to be falling in love with this type is always like eyebrow raising, right? For me, at least. And then just as her friends said and her family said, he's introduced you to his family as what, you know? As a friend, right? I think it is. And the thing is, his family has allowed him, apparently, to choose whether to marry for love or to get into an arranged marriage. So if they've given you that leeway, if they've given you that freedom, why are you then reluctant to introduce this person as a girlfriend, as a fiance, as a partner, right?
Mm.
A bunch of red flags, none of which I think he passed, in my opinion, he passed the catfish test. I think the friend was reaching.
Same.
Yeah.
I don't see anything wrong with that response. And right. I think the friend was trying to make something out of
yes!
nothing. Yes. And I was like, good try, but I don't see that as something to escalate.
Definitely a reach.
Yeah. Like,
where are you from?
First of all, you call yourself attractive. Okay, fine. I can give you that. But it doesn't mean that you'll warrant that kind of response that every guy is going to give you. So, yeah, I actually like her friends because they were very honest. They were very upfront with her on how she deals with relationships. Mm-hmm. And sometimes those type of friends are hard to come by, you know, someone who will give you the truth. And
you could tell the feedback was coming from a good place. From
right,
a place
exactly.
We fucking care about you and you're making right. a big mistake.
Right. Your picker is off. And
your picker is off. Yeah. That's what did she say? That's how she said, right?
Yeah, I wrote that down. I was like, wow, that's a friend right there. Because, you know, oftentimes we're surrounded by our own echo chambers, right? Sometimes we're surrounded by sycophants, and it's refreshing to have someone, to have friends, to be surrounded by people who sometimes opposes you or sometimes will call you out, bring you down to earth, check you and give you that reality check, right? So I tweeted that I cannot wait to have Randy and Myra be invited to the tell-all because I'm pretty sure they're going to tell it like it is. So Sean Robinson better be ready with those questions, or rather the producers better be ready with those messy questions. But yeah, it seems like Jen is someone who's in love with love.
In love with love. I like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And Rishi happens to be that person that she falls for, even though it seems like she didn't like him at first, but then he grew on her.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like. So, but you're right. Like, I think the red flag here is that why is Rishi not being transparent with his family about their relationship because they're supposedly engaged?
Mm.
Then again, yeah. I have a feeling that he's not that into her because why else wouldn't he be proud of bagging a Western woman, I guess, right? And also, it's almost like Sumit being ashamed of being in a relationship, you know, and he's reluctant to tell his family because he knows his family wouldn't approve. They prefer someone local. Maybe that's the reason. Maybe it's purely because of the customs or the culture, not necessarily that he's not into her. But also, Jen seems like a very clingy person. Like, did you see those drunk video calls that she...
Yes, I mentioned that in my notes. Yes. Okay. She called him in one of the videos her first love, y'all, at 46.
Stop it.
She said, "You're my first love." And I'm like, whoa, wait a minute.
No way.
So I don't know. Maybe that was the liquor talking, but I don't know, y'all.
Yeah.
I don't know. And I really like Jen. I want her to find love. I think everyone deserves to find love.
Of course.
And like you said, you know, I think she's in love with the idea of love.
Yeah.
Right. And her friends were like, oh, but you're always moving to different places for all these people. And I think that's just her. She really loves. She's all in. She'll move, you know. And I wanted to tell her friends, like, look, if the local scene is trash, you can move, right? And I think that's what she does. She's like, none of these guys like impress me. So of course I'm going to move out of state, or in this case, out of the country to find love. I'm a hopeless romantic at heart. So for me, that's just like, I've actually done it. You know, I moved to Seattle for a relationship. So I get that. I understand moving for somebody that you really love or someone you really care about. I hope she's not hurt. Rishi, he seems like a good person. I need to see more of him to form a judgment. But as somebody who has a huge social media following, and then as her friend pointed out, he follows primarily women. It's almost like, are you keeping your options open then? Because if your family has given you the go ahead to marry for love and not out of arrangement, then to him, like, the choices that he has are huge. Whereas to Jen, I don't think she sees that many options. To him, he sees many more. I don't know. I would need to see more of him to form a more complete judgment.
Yeah, same. I hope that he's not treating her like a side chick. All right, y'all. So before we move on, just a reminder to folks listening that we are covering the first two episodes of 90 Day Fiancé The Other Way, episode 1 and 2, because we want to make sure that we get all the couples. Apparently, there's another couple that we have yet to meet.
Right.
But yeah, we have two more in our pipeline here, or two more to review. And I thought we can jump into another person that falls really hard in love, I guess, or fall fast in love. Nicole, 38, LA, and Mahmoud from Cairo, Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
I have a lot to say about this.
Let's hear it.
First of all, I think she unblocked him, and someone mentioned this too on the forums. I think she unblocked him when her application for this show went successful, because she's like, well, now I gotta rekindle my relationship or my so-called marriage to this guy, because otherwise there's no content to present, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing that I don't blame her, but I blame 90 Day Fiancé as a whole, is that they keep replaying this storyline, Lon, where in this case, because it's an American show, so you have American women, you know, going after, being enamored, being swept off their feet by a Middle Easterner or a North African man, and then afterwards being shell-shocked by how different the culture is.
Mm-hmm.
And then they sort of victimize themselves because these men won't change for them, because that's how they've been living their entire life. It's like,
right.
Why do we keep revisiting this theme? Because I feel like at some point, 90 Day Fiancé actively plays this role of shitting on those type of culture. And in this case, specifically the Muslim, Islam as a religion, because, oh, poor Nicole, she has to cover herself. Well, what do you expect? You married an Egyptian man.
Mm-hmm.
Did you not do a background check? Did you not research his culture? Did you guys not talk about expectation? And I get it. You had a whirlwind romance. But I don't know why there's this recurring theme of like American women expecting the men to change for them. And then again, I'm not just blaming it one way, right? This is not unidirectional, you guys. I think this is bidirectional too. Obviously, the men that they married, they expect them to change, because if you put yourself in their shoes, you marry into my culture. So I guess you should understand that this is my expectation of what you should wear, how you should conduct yourself. No, you cannot hug other people.
Right.
And I mean, yeah, it comes across as oppressive, but that's their culture. It has been like that for hundreds of years, and maybe even thousands of years. So what are you expecting? You know, and I think this is where I'm getting a bit frustrated with the whole like 90 Day Fiancé always trying to amplify the third worldness of a place and also the oppressiveness of other people's culture.
Right. Which is a narrative, by the way, right? It's a narrative, because there are people in that culture who practice that culture who do not feel oppressed.
Right.
And I understand if people who are not of that culture feel oppressed by it, but there are people who are practicing Muslim and practicing and who hold a different perspective, who agree and say, oh, well, I'm covering myself up for modesty purposes. And I forget exactly who, but there was a couple, and the white woman in this case fully embraced the religion. And
Avery.
Like Avery, right?
Avery and Omar.
Yes. And what a queen, right? She knew what she was getting into. She accepted what she was getting into and says, if this is the husband I'm going to marry, then these are the standards that we need to abide by to make this marriage successful. Then I'm going all in. And she fucking went all in. Yeah. And I think in these kind of relationships, you really do have to fully embrace it. You can't just embrace it halfway and have one foot out and saying, okay, I'm gonna, but it has to be like this. No, it can't. And again, it's not just Muslims and Islam, right? Let's be real. If you were to marry a hardcore conservative Christian, there are standards too about how women dress. And women admittedly feel oppressed by Christianity because of it. You know what I mean? In schools, how you can't wear something that's above a certain inch measurement from your knees or whatever. Women are sent home because of what they're wearing, right? So let's not paint this out to be a Muslim thing. It also exists in Christianity, right? So we're very careful to point out that this is a narrative of mm-hmm. oppression that they're painting out on this show, because if you were to date somebody who's like strictly like Christian too, there are definitely rules. Nuns are the same way. Nuns have to cover themselves up and wear things on their heads. You know, and that's why I want to say, these are cultural values. These are religious values. These dress codes are rooted in religion and culture. And if you're going to marry somebody of that religion and culture, then these are just the things that they practice. And, you know, you can't be half-assed about it. I like Nicole. I like that she's a creative. I like that she's into fashion. I like these things about her. And I also liked that how she knew that this wasn't working and that it was time for a divorce. And I also like that you mentioned that, you know what? She unblocked him because of the show. Because I was wondering why the fuck? Why? She recognized it. She knew this yeah. wasn't working and was like, I can't do this. Then why the fuck are you trying to get back into it? Yeah. And again, it goes back to this, well, maybe 90 Day Fiancé came knocking and was like, this would be interesting TV. We need another American woman who's just, oh, I do not like these standards that are being imposed on me because I'm marrying somebody who's like a practicing Muslim, right? Like, it's a fucking tired narrative. And we see it in every season and every spinoff. Like, yeah. Are y'all not tired of this? But I get it. I get it. It makes good TV, but we're seeing the same shit recycled over again, right?
Yeah.
And I really do like Nicole. I think she's an interesting person. I just feel bad and I'm not going to hate. I don't know what her financial situation is. And I'm not one to hate on the clout chase if you think it'll make your life better. Like, who am I to say she doesn't need the money and she should reject the offer from 90 Day Fiancé? You know, if it'll improve her life. I'm not going to hate on that, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe she did. Maybe she got an email and she's like, fuck.
Let's do it.
Let's fucking do it. Let's fucking do it. But yes, it answers for me the question, why? You identified the problem. You said this isn't working. But you're like, hey, maybe we can work this out, right? Yeah.
So. Yeah. At this point, it's like clown behavior, right? Like, you know that it doesn't make sense to you, and yet you're still going for it. But yeah, you're right, Lon. I do like her. She seems like a nice person. Again, like, falling really hard in love, you know, falling head first. It's crazy how, you know, they got married. And it's like these people just, again, no judgment. I mean, yeah, I sometimes believe in love at first sight. And I guess I wish people would take their time, but I get it. You see an opportunity, you're like, I'll go for it because why not? YOLO.
But, YOLO.
Right? I like how when I was watching Pillow Talk, I like how John, I forgot whose brother, but you know, John from Boston.
From Boston.
Because after they found out that she was married 2 months before having to leave Mahmoud to go back to the US, John was saying, well, I could have played Call of Duty longer than that. That gaming point of reference is just chef's kiss. Anyway, yeah, so like Lon said, this narrative has been overplayed many times. And I hate that they keep targeting the same demographic. It's tired, you know? Like, what do you expect?
Yeah. Cultural and religious differences aside, do you see any red flags either with Nicole or with Mahmoud as a person?
It seems like they cannot reach a compromise, right? Mm-hmm. Because Mahmoud wants this wife that will be subservient and will adhere to his culture. I say culture, not necessarily like he's forcing her to convert. Like, I didn't get that when I watched them. So it's not like he's saying like, yeah, we cannot get married until you convert to Islam. Because I think for him, he may be a practicing Muslim, but maybe he's open-minded enough to accept a foreign wife,
knowing
that, okay, I don't need to convert her as long as I'm the head of the household and I'm the one that's like leading us to the path of Islam or whatever. And that's why I think he's more into like enforcing the local customs and culture onto her. Things like covering yourself, you know, being modest, behaving modestly, or behaving a certain way that is common in their culture, right? Like no hugging of men, no touching. So again, like I guess for someone like me who was born Muslim, like it's not a foreign concept, but I can see how it's a struggle if you're not accustomed to that. Because people who are outside of that would be like, oh yeah, this is super oppressive. This is like so foreign, so like alien to me. And that's what Nicole is feeling right now, is she's like, on her side, she thinks that he will change for her. And he thinks that she will change for him. So I feel like they can't seem to reach a compromise. But it's still early on, Lon. So I am going to reserve my, you know, jury's still out. So I can't tell if they're going to last or if this is just a ruse, right? Like, I suspect that she unblocked him because she's going to get this TLC money. But we'll see. We'll see.
I didn't like how during their conversation, it wasn't even inferred. He basically said that she causes a lot of the fights. And she's like, she said, how did she phrase it? She said, wait, you don't think that you fight with me a lot? And he was like, well, mostly it's your fault.
Yeah.
She tried to play it off, right? She said, oh, aren't we the jokester today? It was so uncomfortable. She's like, aren't we the jokester today? And he's like, no, it's you. And she's like, well, you don't think you're responsible for any of this? And he's like, well, a little bit, but it's mostly you. I was like, whoa. And maybe it is. I don't know. I haven't seen enough of it. To me, it was almost like, okay, wait. It can't be completely one-sided here, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know how many times they fight and how many times it was whoever's fault. For me, when I get into fights, I'm not keeping score. You know, I think when people get into conflicts, you can see it from both sides, and you both have a shared kind of responsibility to own up to whatever you did. But for him to just automatically go, well, obviously it's you. Are we the jokester today? I was like, okay. So for me, that was one of the eyebrow raisers, like, are you going to be like this? Is it always going to be her fault? And that's so exhausting for someone to be in a relationship where they feel like it's constantly fucking them. That's like getting the blame for everything. And I really felt bad for her in that scene, because to shift the blame completely on somebody is just, I've been in that. And I was just like, oh, I don't like how he did that.
Yeah. It's going to be exhausting. And well, I guess if that's the case, if this continues, yeah, they won't last, right?
Yeah.
We'll see.
Get the bag, though.
Get the bag.
Get the bag.
Get that money. Stay till the tell-all, at least. All right. Last couple on our list is, I think, my favorite. I don't know about you, Lon, but it's Gabriel, 32, from Margate, Florida, and Isabel, 34, from El Carmen, Colombia. So, first of all, I'm probably going to get roasted. I don't see gender. I'm not sure if that's an offensive thing to say, but I think from me, when I say that, I'm just saying I'm very ignorant, because when I watched Gabe for the first time on episode one, I was like, oh, great, Gabe, nice guy, in love with this chick from Colombia. Great. You know, he seems like a nice guy. Like, to me, I didn't even know about the trans thing until he actually said it. And my own husband was the one who pointed that out before Gabe actually revealed that he was a trans. And I was like, huh, okay, well, doesn't matter, because he's still a likable person. Like, I don't care.
Right.
All I care about is, seems like they're in a fantastic relationship. What I respect about that is the fact that Gabe handled his gender reveal, if I could call that, very openly and very early on in their relationship. He didn't wait till like, oh, oops, I was once a female or whatever. He openly admit, because he knows that in this day and age, when people stalk other people on social media, you're going to find out sooner or later, and then there'll be questions. And he kind of got ahead of it, you know, or got in front of it by addressing it sooner rather than later. And I respect that,
right?
Because I think, you know, once you tackle that, you can move forward And if, let's say, Isabel doesn't accept him, then at least he can move on. They both can move on and be like, all right, well, this has been great, but, you know, deuces. You know what I mean? Like,
that was the very responsible thing to do, was to out himself, I guess. Just to do that, to give her the information she needs to proceed in the relationship.
Yep.
Right. And just to say, look, we're moving here. And before we get any further, you need to know this. And yeah, that's information that's very important. And I understand timing for people in LGBTQ communities is very important. And we want to give them, you know, the decision to come out when they're comfortable, when they feel safe, and, you know, on their own time. But to be fair, when you're in a relationship where feelings are involved and people are falling in love and you're starting to plan a future, sooner is better. And
always.
The way he handled that, I was like, look, before this progresses, here's what I need to tell you. And it's awesome that Isabel was like, well, I don't care. I love you and you're a man to me. And we'll see how the parents react, because that's, I think for right now, is the only conflict I see with their story moving forward. I think Gabriel and Isabella, on the surface at least, are very happy. The only source of conflict right now is, well, how do we get our parents involved?
Yeah.
Or my parents on Isabel's side.
Yeah. Right, right. Yeah. And I also appreciate how he shared his very heartfelt story about how he knew that he needed to convert, I guess, or he's trans. And I thought that was the kind of explanation that people need to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a lot of assumption out there about, like, oh yeah, trans kids, they are influenced. They think it's a fad, or they think that it's like the flavor of the month or whatever. But the way Gabe explained it is that he's always felt that way since he was very young.
Mm-hmm.
And he just felt like, okay, I gotta do this. And I think he first came out as, I want to say, lesbian. And then he decided to, well, I guess that was a he back then, but she then decided to do the whole transition. And that's when she felt at peace, right? Or at ease with their sexual orientation.
He didn't have the language yet to understand what he was going through, and he's like, well, am I a lesbian? But, you know, that addresses the sexuality part, but that doesn't address the identity, the gender identity part. And he's felt more like a guy. So.
Yeah.
And that's why, if anything about this show is just trash TV or whatever label people give it, and I'm not going to say they're doing it 100% the correct way, but I do appreciate that the representation is there, because these stories need to be told. And and Gabe, as a trans man being on TV to tell the story, and we get to see that perspective, we get to see that story and hear from him. These are the things that we need to start becoming accustomed to seeing on television. We want to start normalizing, I believe, to take away the stigma and the fears that are associated with the trans community, and just to see them as people.
Yeah.
So it's good. So props to TLC for including a trans man.
Yep. Props to TLC. Sometimes, you know, it's two steps forward, one step back with them, but better to have this type of representation. And as a cis female, I apologize if sometimes I get my pronouns wrong, or like I get my language wrong about the LGBTQ.
We're trying our best here, folks.
We're trying our best, yeah. But we're always accepting of anyone. Everyone, you know, all humans are human. So, all right, cool. Because we are a WTF podcast, we will end this with our WTF moment. So, Lon, let's hear yours first.
Okay, so Gabe, you're awesome, but ew, name tattoos? I don't know, y'all, about how y'all feel about name tattoos.
Elon, I got two words for you.
What's up?
Davidson. He also is guilty of name tattooing, man. He tattoos whoever that he's dating. Like, he's like, that's how hard he falls in love with them, I guess. He like, right away, I think the recent one that he tried to remove was Kim Kardashian's and all her kids' name or something. I could be wrong, but, you know, fact check me, you guys, if you want.
Too? Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So I can't blame Gabe, but, you know, his sister called him out on it. So, you know.
Yeah. If you love a person, I get it. And I understand it's coming from a good place. And I understand saying, you know what, like, let's do it. I love this person, and my intent is to stay with this person forever, which I'm assuming is the intent when you get a name tattoo. It's just one of those things for me, though, the permanence of it can be a curse, right? And that scares me. But hey, props to anybody there who's getting name tattoos. Obviously, the intention is there that this is on me forever. And, you know, I think that I'll be with this person for a very long time. But yeah, that was one of my WTFs. Let me throw in another one really quick. I think, and I think other people would agree, and I know she has her reasons now that you brought it up, Nadia, in this podcast, but I didn't like that she being Danielle, but she canceled the visa or whatever and didn't tell him. And she just like, oh, well, I'm just going to tell him when I get there that I'm coming to the Dominican Republic and that's it. And I was like, oh, well, you're not giving him then the information he needs to make an informed decision about the relationship. Yeah. I think that's controlling and manipulative.
Yeah.
Also, so WTF to that.
A liar.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Straight up.
Like
lying,
when he's like, this isn't what we talked about. Yeah.
Let me add to that. My WTF moment is that $12 matcha latte with oat milk that she bought from that cafe. Someone actually zoomed in, man. Yeah, you can mess with the internet, but someone actually zoomed into that screenshot. Someone took a screenshot and zooms in, and apparently they charge you extra for ice. Only in New York. and the fact that I think when she was talking to her friend, she said, and this is the tagline that we used earlier during our intro, is that when her friend asked her, like, how are you going to survive in DR? And she was like, I'm going to manifest it.
We're just going to manifest it, folks.
Yeah. So.
And her friends are just like, okay.
It's fine. All right, girl. You do you.
You do.
Manifest that shit. All right. So that's the end of our coverage of The Other Way, Season 4, Episode 1 and 2. Folks, we will be back, I'm guessing, in 2 weeks' time. And it's only because TLC refuses to air the next episode because of the Super Bowl that's coming up this weekend. So I guess you won't hear from us again. I know this is probably the cadence that you're accustomed to because I upload really late and it's my fault. Sorry. But hey, while we're here, Lon, do you want to recommend our listeners any shows, anything that you've been watching?
We spoke about it a little bit earlier, but the Pamela Anderson documentary on Netflix.
Oh, yes.
Great watch. And from me, these documentaries, they make me realize that I am guilty of also painting these people, Pamela Anderson in this case. I'm guilty of seeing her as the person that is portrayed on television and forgetting that these are people who are very different in their real lives and who may or may not want certain things, you know, that are shown on TV. And it's really refreshing. Highly recommend it to anyone who hasn't seen it. I think it's called Pamela Anderson in Her Own Words or something like that.
I believe so, on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I have the same takeaway too, Lon. I guess I would admit that I fall into that category of people who dismiss her as the blonde bombshell that's, you know, slow-mo running down the down the beach. And
the infamous Baywatch intro, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, now that I think back on that show, it really typecasts people. It's like they play up the whole, like, body image, right? You have to have a certain body image to be on that show. So I'm glad they did a remake of that in the movie form, but I guess there was a bit more representation in the movie remake, the one that I think has The Rock and Zac Efron. And that...
I didn't watch it, so this is all news to me.
Yeah, I didn't watch it either, but I know they cast like a variety of people with diverse background, and it was a little bit more inclusive. But yes, back to Pamela. Yeah, I'm so angry that, you know, she didn't get any penance or any compensation for her work in Baywatch, or, you know, no back pay, no residuals on any of her work. And unfortunately, I mean, and this is something that Pamela herself admitted, she's not good with money. And I told Lon that it seems like she's being mismanaged because her agent kept pushing all this typical work to her, where she's being typecast and she's being pigeonholed in this particular trope. And that's how people will remember her by, right? Barbed wire, Baywatch, being a playboy, center. And she's more than that. I think, you know, the show sort of ended with her finishing a Broadway, the Chicago Broadway. And I think she's more than that. She's not empty up there. You know, she's smart. She has a heart. You know, she puts her family first. There's a lot to admire from Pamela Anderson. I think us as a society back then did her wrong. And yeah, it's just unfortunate. And I was telling Lon too, like all those questions that she gets from the media, from talk show hosts, they won't fly in this day and age. But back then, it was almost commonplace for her to get those types of questions. People, and how are people, you know, disgusted by the fact that she and her husband had sex? You know, like, why are we that kind of society where we're like voyeurs, but at the same time disgusted by, you know, two humans having sex? It's like, but they're a husband and wife. What are you expecting? You know, try to let that sink in. Like, we're, you know, on one hand, people like porn, but on the other hand, people are disgusted by when they see real people having sex. It's just mind blowing. But anyway, yeah, I was just angry that the tape was stolen. And I think they made a show about it. And I think her son were pretty pissed about it too, because I don't think they got any permission about that show. And it's starring Seth Rogen, I think, where they.
I think Nick Offerman was in it too. I
Yeah,
think.
yeah,
I don't.
yeah. And I don't know if they got explicit permission from Tommy Lee or from Pamela Anderson, but they did it anyway. They retold the story.
Hulu is notorious for that, by the way. It's on Hulu,
Yeah, it's
and
on
they
Hulu.
are notorious for that. They did a Mike Tyson show, and Mike Tyson came out on social media saying,
Thing, yeah, he
I
didn't
didn't
commission
approve
that.
this, y'all,
Yeah.
and I really wanted to see it, but then after Mike said that, I was like, fuck that, I'm not watching
Yeah.
it.
Yeah, I don't know how they got around that. It must be some legal loophole where they're like, all right, well, this is clearly Pamela Anderson and Tommy Lee, and the story, we're retelling the story.
And
Seems to
then when
be.
they retell it, they take liberties that are
Yes.
not factual. And
Yeah.
like they mentioned it in the documentary, they're like,
Yeah.
oh, they're trying to say that we did this and that we didn't pay the guy this. And I'm just
Yeah.
like, my gosh, like for people who don't know and they just watch that and take it as truth, it's just going to further perpetuate, you know, the false image
Yeah.
of who she is. So if you are like me and you just wrote Pamela Anderson off as a playboy centerfold who is using her good looks to marry a rock star, do a sex tape, and like, now that I'm so old, I'm like, of course she wasn't that person. Of course she's multidimensional. Of course she's a human being with like dreams and wants and things like that. Like, it's, I've just felt so bad watching it going, why did I not consider this? Why did I write her off as just the playboy playmate, you know, who's running around on the beach in Baywatch and using her assets, you know, it's to her advantage and climbing up this whatever the ladder based on her popularity as a good-looking, attractive human being.
Yeah.
But there's just so much more to her. The documentary really does a good job, I think, of showing her very vulnerable and
Yeah.
showing, look, like they make her read from her journals, you know, spoiler alert, right? I'm not going to spoil what's in the journals, but it was just another side of her, a refreshing side to show the humanization of
Yep.
Pamela Anderson, that this is somebody who journaled and who told, you know, her stories and her experiences because she wanted to keep them, which was part of the reason her and Tommy video recorded everything, including their trips and
Intimate
including
moments,
intimate
sure,
moments.
yeah.
Right. This just wasn't something, this wasn't a commodity. It was commodified because somebody knew they could make money off it. And you know what? Tommy Lee and Pamela Anderson didn't see a cent of it. And while it fed into Tommy's rock star persona, women always pay the price for shit like this, right?
Yeah.
And unfortunately, Pamela was on the losing end of that. So
yeah, yep, yep. I was listening to this podcast of the director of the show, who actually talked about the documentary. And yeah, Pamela chooses not to wear makeup. She just wants to be her authentic self.
Mm.
There were instances where she just couldn't read those journals because she was telling them that, okay, well, if I stumble upon like an entry that makes me sad, like I won't be able to continue. So it's better that you guys tell it in your own words, or it's better that someone reads it off or something like that. And I feel bad for her, but it seems like she's moving forward. My only call out is that I wish she had stuck with Kelly Slater. She was with him. She was supposed to be with him when she got married to Tommy Lee.
Yeah, imagine finding that out when you're supposed to, right?
Introduce yeah, because he was.
I don't want to spoil it. I'm trying not to spoil it, but this is the only thing. when she admitted that, I was like,
I felt that her life would have been a little bit different, just a little bit different.
Yeah.
Again, like you guys need to watch it. I will stop right here just so I don't like spoil too much of it. But yeah, go watch it, guys.
I highly recommend it.
Yeah, it's a great documentary. And yeah, did you watch Glass Onion, Lon?
Not yet.
Rian Johnson. Okay, that's another one that you should watch. Murder mystery.
Yeah. Love it. It's a part of the Knives Out franchise.
Yeah, Knives Out.
Yeah.
Yep. So you got to watch the first one, which has your favorite actress, Ana de Armas. And then the second one is actually pretty awesome.
Yeah. Rave reviews for Glass Onion.
Yeah. Yeah. The writing is so good. In other 90 Day Fiancé news, and this is a very sobering and somber news, unfortunately, Shahida suffered a miscarriage. We both, I want to say, we rooted for her to get pregnant by Bilal. And yep, unfortunately that happened. And hated the fact that people sort of like force it out of her. I don't think she volunteered this information, but she kind of had to like say something. So yeah, that's how we found out that she suffered a miscarriage. Hopefully they'll try it again. The thing about miscarriage too, that, well, as a woman, I would say, I think there's a lot of stigma around miscarriage, but I think people also forget that it happens so often and it can happen to anyone. So it's, I hope people kind of like chill on that because, you know, as sad as it is very sad. I mean, especially for someone like her who really genuinely want to start a family, but I really hope that they'll try again. We just need to give them space, you know, and don't judge them. I would say so.
Right. Hearts out to Bilal and Shahida.
Yeah, absolutely. And on that bombshell, it's goodbye from us. So Lon, any final words?
Again, happy Black History Month and happy Valentine's Day to all y'all out there. I hope your team wins in the Super Bowl. And yeah.
Good one. What he said. All right, guys. Till next time. Bye.
Bye. Thanks for listening, WTFers. If you love the podcast, give us a 5-star review on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. It is appreciated and really helps us out. You can also find us under listener support on anchor.fm and donate for as low as 99 cents or on Patreon at WTF Extra. You can engage with us on email, Twitter, and Instagram at 90dayfiancewtf. We especially would like to hear what your WTF moments are each episode. We might even shout you out. Don't forget to like, share, and follow the podcast.